Britt Guerin, good to be talking with you, Chief Executive of Isibindi Africa Lodges. And we want to find out more about your operation, Britt, for the BizNews community. It's perhaps the best place to start, though, always is with your own story, how you got into the hospitality industry in the first instance. I do know that we grew up very close to each other. We're both from KwaZulu-Natal. You came from Dundee.
Yeah, hi, Eric. Yeah, good to be chatting. Grew up in Dundee. I went to school there and then went off to broaden my horizons at Stellenbosch. And then, yeah, ended up not really knowing what to do after I'd done my BCom degree. And wanting to do something different, my dad had a business in Dundee. So a friend was working up at Mala Mala. So I went up there to become a jeep jockey, a game ranger, and had a lot of fun up there and then traveled overseas for a while. And then Dave Rattray, who was a neighbor to us in at Rorke's Drift, heard that I was, looking for something else, and he offered me a position at Fugitive Drift Lodge to come and help him with his sort of restocking the old cattle farm that they'd fenced and created a game reserve there. So I joined Dave and helped him with anti-poaching and the game side of things, and was fascinated by the history, and eventually took some of the tours for him to St. Laurent and Rorke's Drift. So that was a complete change, something unexpected. But yeah, I was back sort of on the banks of the Buffalo River, which I'd really just loved as a child growing up, and lots of trips down the river and so on. So it's good to be back in Dundee all those years ago.
Well, to have survived in the hospitality industry over the past couple of years required quite a lot of luck as well as courage, and yet you've come through it. Are you stronger?
I think so, Alec. Yeah. So I mean, it was a fascinating time. Obviously, that initial lockdown for all of us was really terrifying. And particularly once we realized it was going to be with us for a while. I mean, initially we thought, oh, 2 or 3 weeks, this is going to be over. And then we realized it was settling in and we're going to be in it for a while. And like a lot of people I've spoken to, the 4 or 5 months of the hard lockdown was some of the busiest days I've had for a long, long time. And it was reconfiguring the business, working out how we going to survive through COVID, just looking at every little detail in the business, cutting costs, which you tend not to do. You tend to do it less than you should potentially, because the business has been growing over the years, and we focused, our focus is on giving people experiences, and not so much on the cost. I mean, we obviously have to be very careful over the years with how we run the cost side of the business. The drive is always just giving the people that wow factor, and this was like, okay, there are no guests anymore. So we can't do what we love doing, and that's, showing off these beautiful places. We had to just cut back on costs, and it was a interesting exercise. And we've certainly, I think, the business has become a lot leaner. We also took one of our biggest costs is salaries and wages. It's also our biggest asset, obviously. But it's generally been a fixed cost over the years. And we've rejigged that, and everyone has sort of gone back onto a daily or an hourly rate. Which now makes it a variable cost. So it's no longer just a fixed cost. And it's been interesting, and I'm hoping that people are seeing the value in a sort of a variable salary, in that they, when their guests are in camp, they're getting paid more. So they really now see the value of having tourists in camp, because it reflects directly in their salaries. And I'd rather I'd rather pay them a little bit more and have that basis of employment where they're highly motivated, and then just have kind of, you know, staff that expect a salary and don't really know who's paying the salary. That, you know, ultimately the guests and the guests being happy is what pays their salary.
Quite a portfolio. I guess the thing that most people would be wondering is, how do you get those assets in the first place? Starting off with the Cozy Bay, how did you have the vision, or where did the vision come from to put together the beach and the forest lodges? And then take us through Tlutlui, how that came through, and then the relationship in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, look, Paige has got more vision than I have. So Paige can see a much bigger picture. I just bumble along and I suppose I'm maybe more of an opportunist than, you know, and I'll see, you know, see an opportunity which Paige will often bring along, and we'll make it work from there. So obviously, starting out, I actually realized with working for Dave that there was a huge sort of potential for the Zulu side to be told in the battlefields, and I arranged to lease a piece of land from the Rorksdrift mission, and I was going to build Zulu huts and you know, really give people an authentic experience. And my dad said, well, you know, if I'm going to be investing, you know, that kind of effort, wasn't a lot of money, which at that stage I certainly didn't have access to. He said, well, you know, is it not wiser to actually build on his place? So it was a really kind offer of him, and that's what we did. So we actually built the first lodge in a Zulu style, on his place. And from there, we heard of an opportunity up at Cozy, where, you know, the community had been in negotiations with a developer to build a small camp there. And then this developer had another opportunity and had left. And this community was sort of kind of stuck with no one to take their project forward. So, yeah, we just partnered with the community there, and I built the Zulu Lodge at Rorksdrift. Then moved on to Cozy Bay and spent 2 years there building and then running Cozy Forest Lodge. And then while we were there, an opportunity came up to actually tender for Tonga Beach Lodge. And again, there, a partnership with the community. So we've got a lot of community partnerships. Rhino Ridge is also a 50-50 partnership between us and the community. So, you know, and I think that's critical. We have an opportunity, firstly, to show off some of the incredible assets that we have in Southern Africa. But more importantly, we're in a position where we're close to conservation areas, but also close to communities on our borders there. And really, the future has got to be to get those communities involved and invested, you know. Jobs are great. Jobs are fantastic, and we desperately need them in this country. But I think they need more than just jobs. They really need to be invested, and that's what we realized 1997 when we won the tender for Tonga Beach Lodge. We realized then that we had to get communities as partners, and it comes through. You know, we just get fantastic comments from our guests on how sincere our staff come across. You know, they really are passionate because it's their business, you know. So as much as it's ours, it's also theirs. And so we all have to put our hearts on the line to you know, make it a special stay for our guests. It's a competitive space we're in. It's an international space. We're an export business, but you've got to come out here to fetch the goods. That's often the trick. We've got to really work hard to make sure people keep coming back.
Have you got a similar partnership in Zimbabwe with a community there?
So Zimbabwe, a little bit different there. We're in the middle of the park. So the partner that we've got there is a Zimbabwean woman who originally had the concession. She had some other developers that were partnered with her, and they for different reasons, just couldn't get it off the ground. So she then approached us through a mutual friend. So she's our sort of a partner. I wouldn't call her a community partner. She was the ex-ambassador to Botswana and then Germany for Zimbabwe. But, you know, the politicians in Zimbabwe, you know, don't have a lot. You know, the ones that are sort of are no longer sort of employed as such, you know, are earning their local currency, which is really worth tuppence. So she's a wonderful woman. And we're so happy to have her as a partner. And she's realized her dream of developing the island. So there we don't have a community partner as such. We've partnered with an individual. But we do a lot of anti-poaching work and work with communities in the Big Four. So there's no neighbor as such. Having said that, we actually a neighbor to Zambia, and we're doing a lot of work with that community. Zambia is obviously going through a great growth phase now, but they've had some really tough years. And these poor Zambians across the way from us, they're just desperate for water. They live on the Zambezi, but they have to use it. But they're just saying to us that, you know, their children and women, you know, nearly monthly are getting taken. So we're helping them with that. That's a community that we're helping. They're not partners in the business. We certainly helping where we can, and we've always done that. And we've helped communities. You know, we've got a foundation now established, which my wife runs, so we're helping communities all over the place with. And that also through COVID, that really gave us a push to expand our community kind of upliftment program from not just our neighbors, direct neighbors at each lodge. But to other communities wherever help is needed.
Brett, what do you mean getting taken?
You mean the Zambians?
Yeah, is that by animals? By
hippies? Sorry, crocodiles. Sorry, yeah, crocodiles. Are taking them while they're collecting water. Yeah, yeah.
Goodness gracious! So it's it's a real world out there that you're operating in.
Yeah, no. Look, up in Zimbabwe, things bite for real, you know, and these poor Zambians, you know, living on with this beautiful water flowing past them, but every time they go and draw water or do their washing, they're taking their lives into their own hands. So it's great to be able to help them very easy in a small way for us, but so meaningful to them. And that's what's been really rewarding about our business over the last 25 odd years. It's just seeing how our staff have grown, seeing how the communities have really benefited. It's amazing to see how our staff from very rural areas with very, very sort of basic educations, and really become, through employment, have become quite sophisticated and now are able to send their children off to better schools. I mean, we've done a lot of work with the schools in the areas as well. And it's just, I've noticed in the last, you know, since we've had the business, and I mean, a lot of our staff have been with us for 20 years plus, and just how more sophisticated they are. I mean, we've got lodge managers that started as guides now. It's great to see the growth in the staff over the time.
What kind of people come to your lodges? It sounds to me as though it could be quite dangerous. Maybe you can set that to rest.
I mean, we obviously get a lot of international clients. So that's by far the bulk of our visitors come from overseas. We are in remote areas, but, you know, that's our job is to make sure that everyone has a safe journey to our lodges and then is looked after. So we have, you know, obviously professional guides and registered guides out off the beaten track, but with all the mod cons. We don't follow this sort of star grading system of SA Tourism, but we've always, our sort of motto is 4-star prices, 5-star service, and 6-star location. So, yeah, I mean, we're very proud of the food that people get, which is a big factor during your stay. It's just to have some great cuisine, and then just be pampered, and at the same time, just take cognizance of kind of where you are and enjoy. To me, the real luxury is to have a space to yourself. To be one of only a few people in a very beautiful location with not a lot of other people to sort of share with. And that's, to me, not a lot of people understand it, but more and more people are realizing the luxury of space. And then you just enjoy that space. And all our lodges have tried to tie in with local design elements to really bring the environment around you sort of into the buildings.
And the price points?
So it varies from lodge to lodge, but they starting at around about 3,000 Rand per person per night. And then going up, each lodge has got different sort of levels of rooms. So we've got, standard rooms and then honeymoon suites and so on. And going up to about 6,000 Rand per person per night. And that includes normally most activities and all your meals. So that's sort of the price point. With COVID, we've offered discounts to South Africans, which were initially 40%. We've now gone to a 30% discount for South Africans. And we've actually, a lot of South Africans supported us and really got us through COVID. And the requests kept on coming back. Jeepers, we didn't even know about this. And please just have those rates available going forward. So we have. We're going to keep a 30% discount available to South Africans on a first come first serve basis, but that will always be available. Just as a kind of giving back to giving the South Africans the support that they showed us during COVID.
Brett, just to close off with access, if you're talking about the far north of KZN. Do you need a 4x4 to get to your lodges?
You do. So to get to the lodge itself, you do need a 4x4. We have points at the different lodges. Not Rhino Ridge, you don't need a 4x4, but Cozy Forest and Tonga Beach, you do. But we have pickup points, and we either do the pickup ourselves, or at Tonga we have a subcontracted, a community member who's bought two vehicles. And they then do the 4x4 transfer for you if you don't have your own. So it's quite easy, hire a car or a normal sedan, get to the meeting point, and then we do the 4x4 transfer, which is about an hour's drive along a beautiful sandy track. So quite a fun trip in.
And you and Paige, do you spend time at your lodges hosting people?
We spend time at the lodges, not so much hosting people. We've got four kids and three of them are at different schools in Pietermaritzburg. So, we tend to spend a lot of time with them at this stage. We spend less time at the lodges than we did. We've got really great staff now that sort of run each, managers at each lodge. And then a team of a few people at our office that also manage it. So we don't we rarely have to actually host people, but we do go up. Paige does all the interiors and the foundation work, so she's often up there for that. And I go up on a sort of when I need to basis. So if there's a big problem, or if I do a lot of this, dealing with staff. But sometimes we won't go up for 2 or 3 months to a particular lodge. And then we kick ourselves every time to say, sure, we need to get up there more often. But, life goes at a pace, and we've got four kids at four different schools. you've got to sort of divide your time equally. But we're very lucky. We're lucky that we've got great staff and we don't need to be at the lodges all the time.
What I'm getting at is with this kind of a break, one feels that you change a lot. And if you're in the lodges and you see the guys coming from the city, from what arrives to what departs might be very different.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, and COVID has been very stressful, for a lot of people, for numerous different reasons. And there's definitely been a change from people really wanting to connect with friends, family, and with nature, you know, and really just, I suppose, appreciate what we've got, friendships and being in touch with the natural world, I think are two really critical elements for our psyche. And I think people have realized that. And I really hope that we don't forget about COVID. You know, I just think it's taught us so many lessons. We've got a tough time ahead of us in this world to get through it, you know. And if we take the lessons that we've learned from COVID and apply them and really look after this world of ours and appreciate it and appreciate the relationships we have, you know, there is a lot of goodwill and then we'll make a difference and we'll get through it. But I think I think COVID also has made us realize that halfway through that, the Ukrainian disaster has made us realize that this change and climate change and the floods in KZN, I think we're going to have to just live and adapt to an ever-changing, fast-changing world. These crises must no longer be crises. They must just be events that can't plan for, obviously, but that we're prepared to deal with and that we've got to be flexible and be on your toes and be able to adapt accordingly.